A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hello, Herman and Corin. I have one more networking question today. I was scrolling through a very geeky home networking forum where people kind of post these ridiculous photos, but ridiculous but inspirational photographs of some really cool home server displays. But besides those kind of inspirational pics, you have a lot of arguing, as happens on any Facebook group. And someone was talking about VLANs. They came up in the context of, do you have a VLAN at home? And of course, people jumped in with all sorts of opinions. Some people said, if you are setting up a virtual LAN at home, you have too much time on your hands. Through to, I have six VLANs, one for IoT devices, one for something else, and one for my work computer. I have zero VLANs, and I have to say it's definitely something that I wondered about. I've seen it's an option in OpenSense and the rest of it, and I'm probably in the category of people that should consider having them, because A, have the skills to set it up, and B, we have a bunch of IoT devices that this is kind of what they're intended for, or so I understand it. Let's talk about how this works in practice, Herman and Corin. And I guess my intuition or my feeling would be in favor of not doing this. Well, it's not that I trust the IoT devices particularly, but that I'm not sure that the trouble of segmenting them actually is worth the effort involved, because what came up in this thread was people were saying just creating a VLAN isn't really going to help. You need to also configure ACL policies. And again, there's just a limit to how much that I think it makes sense to actually invest. I want to set up a home network to do some useful things with it, like having some speakers around the place, but I don't want to become a full-time, you know, sysadmin in my own house. So it's one of those things that I always kind of thought was overkill. We've done some great episodes talking about how networking is done at scale. And I mentioned, just as an example, the case of Kennedy Airport. I think it was our episode about how do people deploy Wi-Fi networks at that kind of gigantic scale, where you've got tens of thousands of passengers moving around a terminal at any given point in time. And of course, in that scenario, it makes sense to have VLANs. And that's how it's done. You have a management VLAN, a passenger VLAN. But when people started playing that to their house, which someone said, I have a guest VLAN, I do kind of think that makes sense for Kennedy Airport. It doesn't make sense for your, you know, for your house personally. But I am accepting any counter arguments. And one question about that, Herman and Corin, is we've talked about different networks like Zigbee and Matter over Thread. And I still feel a bit flaky upon, you know, exactly how these are communicating with themselves and then back out. I always assumed, I guess, that there was no need for external networking. These go back to Home Assistant, and I assumed that was the end of the path, because they're not running internally on my local network. I don't see them show up. I understand it's a different protocol. Does that mean that they are basically operating safely on their own segment because they're not interoperable with what else is on the network? So that risk of lateral movement doesn't really apply. Matter over Thread, I've no idea, because I've yet to buy my first Matter device, but I'd be curious about that as well. When we're talking about putting IoT devices on their own VLAN, are we talking strictly and specifically just about ones that connect through Wi-Fi? Or are there potential reasons and mechanisms through which you can do segmentation even between networks of a different topology or type, maybe is a better word? Herman and Corin, let's talk about VLANs in the home context on today's episode of My Word Prompts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been scrolling through home networking forums, the kind where people post immaculate server rack photos and then immediately start arguing about VLANs. And the question at the heart of it is, does a regular person, even a technically capable one, actually need VLAN segmentation at home? Or is this just sysadmin brain leaking into domestic life?
Oh, this is the exact question that divides every home networking community I've ever seen. You've got the 6 VLAN minimum crowd on one side and the you're cosplaying as an enterprise IT department crowd on the other. And Daniel's instinct is that it's probably overkill, but he's also got IoT devices. He's running OPN Sense. He's exactly the kind of person who could set this up if it were worth doing.
And he's not asking from a place of ignorance. He's asking from a place of, I have the skills, I see the button in the interface, but my gut says the juice isn't worth the squeeze. Which I think is actually a more interesting question than, how do VLANs work? It's, where's the line between sensible precaution and turning your house into a miniature enterprise network?
Before we dive in, quick note, today's script is being written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, which feels appropriate for a conversation about precision and whether certain things are over-engineered.
If it over-engineers, we'll just segment it onto its own VLAN and forget about it.
There we go. So let's start with what Daniel's actually asking. He's got three distinct questions wrapped in one prompt. First, the practical one, is VLAN segmentation at home worth the effort for someone with IoT devices? Second, the philosophical one, where's the line between sensible networking and becoming a full-time sysadmin in your own house? And third, a really good technical question. When we talk about IoT segmentation, are we only talking about Wi-Fi devices? What about Zigbee and Thread and Matter, which operate on entirely different protocols?
That third one is the one that caught my eye. Because if your Zigbee devices aren't even on your IP network, then the whole VLAN conversation might be solving a problem that doesn't exist for a chunk of your smart home. But let's not jump there yet. Let's start with the core question. Why would anyone VLAN their house?
The argument for VLANs at home comes down to one word, isolation. The idea is that not all devices on your network should be able to talk to each other. Your smart thermostat probably doesn't need to communicate with your NASS. Your guest phone doesn't need to see your printer. And most critically, if a cheap IoT camera from some no-name manufacturer gets compromised. And this happens, there are botnets built entirely from hijacked IoT devices. You don't want that compromised device sitting on the same network segment as your work laptop or your backup drive.
The Mirai botnet, back in 2016, was basically a demonstration of exactly this problem. Hundreds of thousands of compromised cameras and DVRs, all because they were sitting on flat networks with default passwords.
Mirai wasn't some sophisticated state actor operation. It was a few kids who figured out they could scan the internet for devices with default credentials and turn them into a DDoS army. Now, if those devices had been on isolated network segments, the blast radius would have been contained. The camera gets owned, but it can't reach anything else.
The security argument is real. But here's where the home networking forum debate gets interesting. And Daniel flagged this himself. Someone in that thread said, just creating a VLAN isn't really going to help. You need to also configure ACL policies. And that's the moment where a lot of people's eyes glaze over. Because now we're not just clicking a checkbox. We're writing access control rules.
This is where I think a lot of the VLANs are overkill. Crowd actually has a point, but maybe not for the reason they think. The point isn't that isolation is useless, it's that partial isolation can be worse than no isolation, because it gives you a false sense of security.
Say more about that.
Here's a common scenario. Someone reads a blog post about IoT VLANs, gets motivated, creates a separate VLAN for their smart home devices, and calls it a day. They didn't set up any firewall rules between VLANs, or they set up rules that are too permissive because they wanted their phone to still talk to the Chromecast. What they've actually done is created a slightly more complicated flat network. The VLAN exists, but traffic is still flowing between segments. The attacker who compromises a light bulb can still reach the main LAN because the rules allow it. You've added complexity without adding security. The worst of both worlds.
Which brings us to Daniel's core hesitation. He's not saying VLANs are pointless. He's saying the effort-to-value ratio doesn't seem to work out once you factor in the maintenance, the ACL configuration, the inevitable debugging when something doesn't work. And I think that's a completely rational position, even for someone with the technical skills.
It is rational. But I want to push back just a little, because the framing of effort versus value depends heavily on what your threat model actually is. And threat modeling is one of those things that sounds very security consultant, but is actually just asking, what am I actually worried about?
And Daniel's implicit threat model seems to be, I don't really trust these IoT devices, but I also don't think anyone's specifically targeting my house. The risk feels theoretical.
Which is fair. But here's where the conversation has shifted in recent years. It's less about targeted attacks and more about automated, indiscriminate compromise. Botnets don't care who you are, they scan IP ranges, find vulnerable devices, and add them to the swarm. Your house isn't being targeted because you're Daniel in Jerusalem, it's being targeted because you have an IP address and a device with a known vulnerability. The digital equivalent of someone walking down a street checking car doors.
IoT devices are, statistically, the unlocked cars. There was a report from a security firm that found the average smart home faces something like 12,000 attempted attacks per week. Most of those are automated scans that bounce off basic router firewalls. But if one device gets through, if you've got a device with a vulnerability that hasn't been patched, which describes basically every IoT device older than 18 months, then the question is what that device can reach once it's compromised.
The value proposition of VLANs isn't prevent initial compromise. It's limit the blast radius when compromise inevitably happens. Completely different calculation. And that's why the you have too much time on your hands crowd is missing the point. It's not about being paranoid. It's about recognizing that the devices we're bringing into our homes have terrible security postures, and a little bit of network segmentation can contain the damage.
Okay, but let's get practical. What does a little bit of network segmentation actually look like for someone like Daniel? He's running OPN Sense, so he's already past the point of using an ISP-provided router. What's the minimum viable VLAN setup that actually provides value?
I'd argue for 3 VLANs as a sensible baseline, and this isn't the 6 VLAN crowd territory, this is the I want meaningful isolation without making my life difficult territory.
Walk me through them.
First, your main LAN. This is where your trusted devices live. Your laptop, your desktop, your phone, your NAS. These are devices you control, you patch, you trust. Second, an IoT VLAN. This is where all your smart home devices go. Smart speakers, cameras, thermostats, light bulbs, anything that connects to Wi-Fi and phones home to some cloud service. Third, a guest VLAN. When someone visits and asks for your Wi-Fi password, they get shunted onto a network that has internet access but can't see any of your devices.
The guest VLAN is the one that, I'll admit, I've historically dismissed as airport-level thinking. But I've come around on it. Not because I don't trust my guests, but because I don't trust their devices. Your friend's phone might be fine. Or it might have some piece of malware that's scanning local networks. Why let it see anything?
Guest VLANs are actually the easiest one to set up, and the one that causes the fewest problems. Guest needs internet, guest gets internet. No need for complicated firewall rules that allow your phone to talk to a specific IoT device for a specific use case. It's clean.
Main, IoT, guest. What's the firewall rule set look like between them?
This is where people get tangled up, but it's simpler than most forum threads make it seem. The core principle is, deny by default, allow specifically. So by default, no VLAN can talk to any other VLAN. Then you add exceptions.
The exceptions are where the pain lives.
But let's be honest about how many exceptions most people actually need. Your main LAN probably needs to initiate connections to the IoT VLAN. Because you want to manage devices, you want your phone to be able to cast to a speaker. Your IoT devices almost never need to initiate connections back to your main LAN. The traffic pattern is asymmetric.
You allow established and related traffic from IoT back to main, which lets responses flow, but you don't allow new connections initiated from the IoT side.
And that one rule, main can talk to IoT, IoT can only respond, not initiate. That's probably 80% of what most home users need. The other 20% is edge cases like, my printer is on the IoT VLAN, and I need to print from my laptop on the main LAN, which is a specific allow rule.
Here's where I think Daniel's hesitation is well-founded. Those edge cases multiply. Suddenly the smart speaker can't see the media server. The Home Assistant instance on the main LAN can't discover devices on the IoT VLAN. You end up playing whack-a-mole with firewall rules, and every time something doesn't work, you have to remember, oh, right. It's probably the VLAN rules.
This is real. Anyone who tells you VLANs are set and forget is either lying or has a very simple network. There is ongoing maintenance, new devices, new use cases, firmware updates that change how discovery protocols work. It's not zero effort.
Let's be honest with Daniel. If he sets up 3 VLANs with proper ACLs, what's the ongoing time investment look like?
For the first 3 months, probably more. You're discovering edge cases, you're learning how your specific devices behave when they're segmented. After that, it tends to settle down. Most of my VLAN rules haven't changed in 2 years, but I also don't add new IoT devices every week. If you're someone who's constantly buying new smart home gadgets, you'll have more ongoing friction.
Which brings us to the other half of Daniel's question, and honestly the part I find more interesting. He's asking about Zigbee and Thread and Matter. These aren't Wi-Fi. They're not even IP in the traditional sense. So does the whole VLAN conversation even apply to them?
This is such a good question, and it reveals something that a lot of home networking discussions miss entirely. When we talk about IoT segmentation, we're almost always talking about Wi-Fi and Ethernet-connected devices. But a huge chunk of the modern smart home doesn't use Wi-Fi at all.
Let's break this down. Daniel mentioned he's got Zigbee devices running through Home Assistant. What's actually happening at the network level?
Zigbee is a completely separate radio protocol. It operates on the 2.4 GHz band, same as Wi-Fi, but it's not IP. Zigbee devices form their own mesh network, and they talk to each other using the Zigbee protocol, not TCP, Top UI. PP. The only bridge between the Zigbee network and your IP network is the coordinator, usually a USB dongle plugged into whatever's running Home Assistant.
The Zigbee devices aren't on your LAN at all. They don't have IP addresses. You can't ping them. They don't show up in your router's device list.
And this is actually a really important security property. A compromised Zigbee device can't directly attack your laptop. It can't scan your network. It can't participate in a Mirai-style botnet because it has no IP. Stack. No ability to make outbound internet connections. The worst it can do is misbehave within the Zigbee mesh. Spam messages, try to disrupt other Zigbee devices, maybe attempt to exploit the coordinator.
The attack surface is the coordinator and whatever software is listening to it. In Daniel's case, Home Assistant.
And that's where you want your defenses. Keep Home Assistant updated. Don't expose it directly to the internet without authentication. But you don't need to put your Zigbee devices on a separate VLAN because they're already on a completely separate network by nature of the protocol. The segmentation is built into the architecture.
What about Thread and Matter? Daniel said he hasn't bought any Matter devices yet, but he's curious.
Thread is interesting because it's also a separate mesh protocol, similar to Zigbee. But Thread devices can be IP capable. Thread uses IPv6 over low-power wireless personal area networks, which means Thread devices can technically have IPv6 addresses and communicate over IP.
They could, in theory, reach the internet.
In theory, yes, but in practice, it's mediated by a Thread border router. The border router is the bridge between the Thread mesh and your Wi-Fi or Ethernet network. Matter devices use Thread as their transport, but they communicate using the Matter application protocol, which runs on top of IPv6. The security model for Matter is actually quite well thought out. It uses device attestation, certificate-based authentication, and encrypted communication. And Matter devices, by design, are supposed to work locally. They don't require cloud connectivity.
Which is a genuine improvement over the previous generation of Wi-Fi IoT devices that required cloud accounts and constant internet connectivity. But if a Matter device is communicating locally over IPv6, is it on your main LAN or not?
It depends on your network topology. If your Thread border router is on your main LAN, then from a network perspective, the Matter device is reachable via the border router. It's not directly on your Wi-Fi, but it's accessible through the border router's IP connection. So if you wanted to segment Matter devices, you'd put the border router on an IoT VLAN. But it gets complicated because the Thread mesh itself isn't VLAN aware. The segmentation would happen at the border router level.
This is starting to feel like the kind of complexity that makes Daniel's "I don't want to be a full-time sysadmin" instinct look pretty sensible.
Honestly, for Thread and Matter specifically, I think the juice is probably not worth the squeeze right now. The protocol security model is decent. The attack surface is limited. The complexity of trying to VLAN segment a Thread mesh through a border router is high. I'd focus on keeping the border router and the Matter controller software updated and call it a day.
Let's synthesize what we've actually got here. For Zigbee and Z-Wave devices, completely separate network by design. No VLAN needed, no lateral movement risk to your IP network. For Thread and Matter, separate mesh with decent security, technically IP, capable but constrained, probably not worth the segmentation headache. For Wi-Fi IoT devices, these are the ones actually sitting on your IP. Network, these are the ones that can be conscripted into botnets, and these are the ones where VLAN segmentation actually matters.
That's exactly the taxonomy. And I think a lot of the VLANs are overkill. Crowd is reacting to a version of the advice that doesn't make these distinctions. They hear, put all IoT on a separate VLAN and think, well, my Zigbee bulbs aren't even on my network, so this doesn't apply. And they're partly right, but they're also missing that their Wi-Fi connected smart TV absolutely is on their network and absolutely has a terrible security track record.
Smart TVs are notorious. There have been multiple documented cases of smart TVs running outdated Android versions with known vulnerabilities, collecting viewing data. Some even had built-in cameras and microphones with questionable privacy practices. And they're just sitting there on the mainland, trusted by default. People keep TVs for 7, 8, 10 years. The software support window is maybe 3 or 4 years if you're lucky.
If Daniel were going to do one thing, just one, what would I recommend? If I had to pick a single VLAN to add to a home network, it would be the IoT VLAN for Wi-Fi devices, not guest, not management, not any of the fancy ones. Just take every Wi-Fi connected thing that isn't a computer or a phone, smart speakers, smart TVs, cameras, thermostats, light bulbs, appliances, and put them on a separate network segment with a firewall rule that says these devices can talk to the internet but can't initiate connections to the main LAN.
That one rule. Deny IoT to main initiation. Main can still talk to IoT.
That one rule eliminates the most common attack path. Compromised IoT device tries to scan the local network, finds nothing it can reach, tries to connect to your NAS blocked, tries to exploit your laptop blocked. It can still phone home to its botnet controller, which isn't ideal, but the lateral movement is gone.
The cost is what? An afternoon of configuration, plus some ongoing fiddling when you add new devices or when something breaks.
For someone with Daniel's skill level, he's running OPN Sense, he's comfortable with networking concepts, I'd say a couple hours of initial setup, maybe a weekend afternoon if you're being careful in testing things. The ongoing cost depends on how often you add new Wi-Fi IoT devices. If you add a new smart speaker every 6 months, you'll spend 10 minutes troubleshooting why your phone can't see it, realize it's the VLAN, add a firewall rule, move on.
What about the argument that this is all security theater? Because the real threats come through phishing and credential theft, not through compromised light bulbs.
That argument has some truth, but it sets up a false choice. You can do both. You can practice good credential hygiene and segment your network. They're not mutually exclusive. And defense in depth means each layer catches what the others miss. Your strong passwords don't help if a device has a firmware vulnerability that allows remote code execution without authentication.
There was a case a few years ago where a casino was breached through a smart thermometer in a fish tank. The thermometer was on the same network as the High Roller database. That's not a hypothetical. That actually happened.
The fish tank thermometer breach. It's become a cybersecurity parable at this point, but it illustrates the principle perfectly. The thermometer didn't need to talk to the database. There was no legitimate reason for those two devices to communicate. But because they were on the same flat network, the attacker used the thermometer as a pivot point.
Now, Daniel might reasonably say, I'm not a casino. Nobody's targeting my house specifically for a sophisticated intrusion. And he'd be right.
He would be right. But the automated stuff doesn't care. The botnet operator isn't targeting Daniel. They're targeting a vulnerable D-Link camera they found through an automated scan. And if that camera is on the same network as Daniel's work laptop, Daniel works in AI and tech comms, he's presumably got sensitive stuff on his machines. Then a completely untargeted, opportunistic compromise suddenly has access to valuable data.
The threat model isn't someone wants to hack Daniel specifically. It's Daniel's devices are part of the ambient attack surface of the internet, and some of those devices are poorly secured.
That's it exactly. And that reframing is what moves VLANs from overkill to reasonable precaution for someone like Daniel. He's not setting up an enterprise security operations center. He's just acknowledging that the cheap smart plug he bought on AliExpress probably isn't getting security updates, and maybe it shouldn't have unrestricted access to his home network.
Let's talk about the guest VLAN argument for a moment, because Daniel specifically called that out as something that makes sense for Kennedy Airport, but not for a house. I want to push back on that a little. The Kennedy Airport comparison is actually misleading. At an airport, the guest network is handling tens of thousands of untrusted devices from strangers. The threat profile is enormous. But at home, the guest network might have 10 devices from people you know. The threat profile is smaller, sure, but it's not zero. And the cost of setting up a guest VLAN is so low. It's literally one additional SSID and a firewall rule that the effort-to-value ratio might actually be better for the home case than for the airport case. At airport scale, you need enterprise-grade equipment and a team to manage it. At home scale, it's a checkbox in OPN sense.
The benefit isn't just about security. A guest VLAN also solves the "here's my Wi-Fi password" problem in a socially elegant way. You're not giving out the password to your main network. If a guest's device is compromised, it doesn't matter. If they accidentally share the password with someone else, it doesn't matter. You can change the guest password without disrupting any of your own devices. There's also the privacy angle. Do you really want every visitor's phone to be able to discover your network shares and media servers?
I've come around on guest VLANs. I used to think they were performative networking. Now I think they're actually one of the lowest effort, highest clarity segmentation decisions you can make. They're completely non-disruptive. Your devices don't change. Guests get internet. That's it.
All right, let's address the elephant in the room that Daniel hinted at. The "I don't want to become a full-time sysadmin in my own house" concern, because I think this is the real reason a lot of technically capable people don't do VLANs. It's not that they can't, it's that they're making a deliberate choice about how they want to spend their time and mental energy.
This is completely legitimate, and I want to be careful not to come across as saying everyone must VLAN their home or they're being irresponsible. That's not my position. My position is, if you have the skills and you have Wi-Fi IoT devices, VLAN segmentation provides meaningful security benefits at a moderate one-time cost and a low ongoing cost. But low isn't zero. And if you'd rather spend that time on other things, that's a valid trade-off.
The key is being honest about what you're trading off. If you choose not to segment, you're accepting that a compromised IoT device could reach everything on your network. That's the risk you're taking. It's probably a small risk. Most people go their whole lives without a compromised smart plug causing problems. But it's not zero, and the risk isn't just to you. A compromised device on your network can be used to attack other people. Botnets are built from compromised devices. It's the digital equivalent of vaccination. You're not just protecting yourself, you're reducing the pool of vulnerable devices that can be used to harm others.
All right, let's get concrete about implementation. Daniel mentioned OPN Sense. What's the actual workflow for setting up an IoT VLAN?
The high-level steps are create the VLAN interface, assign it to a physical interface or bridge, set up a DHCP. Server for the new subnet, create firewall rules on the VLAN interface that allow internet access but block access to other local subnets, and then configure your wireless access points to broadcast a separate SSID that maps to that VLAN. That's maybe 6 or 7 steps, each of which has substeps. It's not trivial, but it's also not black magic. Someone who's already comfortable in the OPN Sense interface can do this in an afternoon. And there are excellent guides. The OPN Sense documentation, the home networking subreddit, Lawrence Systems on YouTube.
The harder part isn't the VLAN creation. It's the firewall rules, specifically figuring out which inter-VLAN traffic to allow so that things still work.
This is where I'd give different advice than what you often see in forums. The forum advice tends to be lock everything down, then add exceptions one by one, which is secure, but it's also the path to spending 3 weekends debugging why your Sonos speakers won't group properly.
What's your alternative?
Start with a slightly more permissive baseline and then tighten over time. So initially, allow main LAN to initiate to IoT, allow established and related traffic back, and block IoT from initiating to main. That's the core rule. Then live with it for a week. See what breaks. If nothing breaks, you're done. If something breaks, you add a specific rule. Rather than starting from zero and building up, start from a reasonable baseline and adjust down. That's a much more practical approach for a home environment.
What about device discovery? This is the thing that trips up a lot of VLAN setups. Your phone is on the main LAN, your smart speaker is on the IoT VLAN, and now your phone can't see the speaker when you go to cast something.
This is the MDNS problem. Multicast DNS is what devices use to discover each other on a local network. How your phone finds your Chromecast, how your laptop finds your printer. And MDNS traffic is link local. It doesn't cross VLAN boundaries by default. So you need an MDNS repeater or reflector. On OPNSense, there's an MDNS repeater plugin. On UniFi, it's called MDNS Reflector. You configure it to forward MDNS traffic between specific VLANs, and suddenly your phone can discover the speaker again.
Now we're adding another service, another configuration file, another thing to maintain. This is exactly the kind of complexity creep that makes people say, "Forget it, I'll just keep everything on one network."
And I don't want to minimize that. Every additional piece of configuration is a potential failure point, and a thing you have to remember exists when you're troubleshooting 2 years later.
For someone like Daniel, who's on the fence, what's your honest bottom line? Is VLAN segmentation worth it for him specifically?
For Daniel specifically, he's running OPNSense, he's got IoT devices, he's technically capable, and he's already thinking about network security. I'd say yes with the 3 VLAN setup we talked about, and with the caveat that he should allocate a weekend for the initial setup and expect some minor ongoing fiddling. The security benefit is real, the cost is moderate, and for someone with his skills, it's not going to be a nightmare.
If he decides not to,
then he should at minimum make sure his IoT devices are on a separate Wi-Fi network with client isolation enabled. Client isolation is a simpler feature that prevents devices on the same network from talking to each other. It's not as good as a full VLAN with firewall rules, but it's better than nothing, and it's literally one checkbox in most access point settings. Combine that with a separate SSID for IoT devices, and you've got a poor man's segmentation that takes about 5 minutes to set up.
Let's circle back to something Daniel said about the forums. People were arguing about whether VLANs are worth it, and the debate seemed to split between, "You have too much time on your hands, and I have 6 VLANs." Neither of those positions is particularly nuanced.
The home networking community has a polarization problem, same as every other online community. You've got the minimalists who think anything beyond plugging in the ISP. Router is overkill, and you've got the maximalists who run BGP in their home lab. Most people should be somewhere in the middle.
The middle is understand what you're protecting, understand what you're protecting against, and apply the minimum configuration that addresses your actual threat model. For some people, that's 0 VLANs. For others, it's 3. For almost nobody at home, it's 6.
6 VLANs at home is almost certainly a hobby, not a security requirement. Which is fine, hobbies are valid. But let's not pretend separating your management interface from your IP. Cameras from your media server, from your guest network, from your work VPN, from your home lab is a security necessity. That's someone who enjoys networking for its own sake. Daniel shouldn't feel like he's failing at home networking because he doesn't have a separate VLAN for his printer.
The printer VLAN is my favorite example of over-engineering. In a corporate environment, printer segmentation makes sense. Some enterprise printers have full embedded operating systems, hard drives that store copies of printed documents. At home, your $30 inkjet is not a meaningful attack vector. The security posture that makes sense for Kennedy Airport doesn't make sense for a one-bedroom apartment. But that doesn't mean the one-bedroom apartment needs zero security.
Alright, let's talk about one more thing. Daniel raised the interaction between VLANs and the non-Wi-Fi protocols. We covered Zigbee and Thread, but what about the broader question of network topology? If you've got devices on Zigbee, on Thread, on Wi-Fi, and on Ethernet, and they're all ultimately talking to Home Assistant, how do you think about segmentation across those boundaries?
Home Assistant becomes the integration point. It's the thing that can talk to everything. The Zigbee coordinator, the Thread border router, the Wi-Fi devices, the Ethernet devices, they all converge on Home Assistant. So, from a security perspective, Home Assistant is the crown jewel. If someone compromises Home Assistant, they've got access to everything.
Much more important, keep Home Assistant updated. Use strong authentication. Don't expose it to the internet without proper hardening. Use a VPN or a reverse proxy with authentication if you need remote access. These are higher impact security measures than VLAN segmentation for most smart home setups.
Start with the Wi-Fi IoT devices. That's the biggest bang for the buck. Zigbee and Thread are already segmented by protocol. Home Assistant can be hardened through software updates and access controls. The Wi-Fi IoT stuff is the gap that VLANs actually fill.
That's a much more focused, practical recommendation than segment everything. It addresses the real risk without turning your house into a networking project.
Daniel also asked about ACL policies specifically. Someone in the forum thread said, VLANs without ACLs are pointless. Is that accurate?
It's directionally correct, but overstated. A VLAN without any inter-VLAN routing is effectively isolated. If there's no route between VLAN A and VLAN B, they can't talk. The ACLs become relevant when you want to allow some traffic, but not all traffic. If you create an IoT VLAN and simply don't configure any routing between it and the mainland, the isolation is complete. No ACLs needed. But in practice, most people do want some routing. They want their phone to talk to the Chromecast, so ACLs enter the picture. But complexity in this context means maybe a dozen firewall rules, not hundreds. We're talking about allow traffic from main to IoT on port 80 and 443, and allow established connections back. Manageable for someone who already knows what a port is and what established connections mean, which Daniel does.
We've got a pretty clear picture here. For someone like Daniel, the sensible approach is identify which of your smart devices are actually on your Wi-Fi network. Put those on a separate VLAN with basic firewall rules. Leave your Zigbee and Z-Wave devices alone because they're already isolated by protocol, and consider a guest VLAN if you have visitors regularly. That's the pragmatic middle path.
If that still feels like too much, enable client isolation on your IoT SSID and call it a day. It's not perfect, but it's better than a flat network where every device can see every other device.
I think the most important thing we've said today is that the VLANs are overkill crowd, and the 6 VLAN minimum crowd are both wrong in ways that make the conversation worse. The real answer is, it depends on your devices, your skills, and your willingness to do some ongoing maintenance. There's no moral dimension to this. You're not a bad person if you don't have VLANs.
You're not a paranoid weirdo if you do. Networking is infrastructure. You build the infrastructure that serves your needs. For some people, that's an ISP router and a flat network. For others, it's a rack of gear and a meticulously segmented topology. Most of us are somewhere in between, and that's fine.
Daniel, if you're listening, and I assume you are, since you sent the prompt, I think you're already doing the right thing by thinking critically about this rather than just cargo culting someone else's setup. The fact that you're asking, is this actually worth it for my situation, puts you ahead of most people who just blindly follow forum advice.
If you do decide to set up VLANs, start small. IoT VLAN first. Live with it for a month. See if the maintenance burden is acceptable. You can always add more later, or you can always tear it down if it's causing more problems than it solves.
One thing we didn't touch on, some routers and mesh systems now include automatic IoT segmentation features. Eero has something like this, so does Google Nest Wi-Fi. It's not as granular as manual VLANs, but it's zero configuration and provides some isolation. For people who want the benefit without the complexity, that's an option worth looking at.
The consumer networking market is slowly catching up to the reality that homes have dozens of IoT devices. We're seeing more one-click IoT network features. They're not as flexible as proper VLANs, but they're dramatically easier.
One last thought before we wrap. Daniel mentioned the Kennedy Airport episode we did, the one about deploying Wi-Fi at massive scale, and he drew a contrast between that and home networking. But I think there's actually a connection. At Kennedy, they use VLANs because they have fundamentally different user populations, with different trust levels. Employees, passengers, airline staff, security systems. The segmentation maps to real organizational boundaries.
At home, you've also got different trust levels. Your laptop is different from your smart TV, which is different from your guest phone. The scale is smaller, but the principle is the same. Segment based on trust and function. It's not about being an airport. It's about recognizing that not all devices on your network deserve the same level of access.
The principle scales down better than the implementation details do.
That's a perfect way to put it.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the late Victorian period, a botanist in Belize discovered a species of moss capable of producing over 1 million spores from a single capsule, the highest reproductive output ever recorded in a bryophyte.
1 million spores from one capsule. A lot of moss.
I'm going to be thinking about that for the rest of the day, and I'm not sure I want to.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop for keeping this show running, and to Daniel for the prompt. If you're setting up VLANs this weekend, may your firewall rules be correct on the first try. Find us at myweirdprompts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.